We have some slides that go along with the sermon today, so Mark's just pulling them up for us. Our scripture verses for today paint a very clear picture. The Isaiah passage reminds us of the slaughter of Pharaoh's army as the Israelites left Egypt. Good and bad people, right and wrong, those who will be rewarded and those who will be punished, those who are pleasing to God and those who are not and will be destroyed for it or have been destroyed for it. We are reminded of the people of God delivered from evil and pain and those who were destroyed because they got in the way, and I find myself resisting that, questioning, even disturbed. As a pacifist, as an Anabaptist, I wonder, what do we do with these stories in our sacred texts that justify the genocide of those declared the enemy of God or the enemy of God's people? As I've been grappling with these stories and questions, I keep coming back to a line from our psalm. When God was good to us, it says we were like those who dream. When the Lord restored the fortunes of Zion, we were like those who dream. Then our mouth was filled with laughter and our tongue with shouts of joy. Then it was said among the nations, the Lord has done great things for them. The Lord has done great things for us, and we rejoiced. Who are these people who dream? And how can we become like them? As some of you know, I traveled to Africa last month. I got an education on the history of Ethiopia and Eritrea, a smaller country to the north of Ethiopia, which separates Ethiopia from accessing ports on the Red Sea. Thought you might like geographical orientation. The history of both countries is intertwined and wrought with stories of famine and unrest and war, as perhaps is the history of any country in the world, including our own. But in Ethiopia, the main figure that rises to the top is Haile Selassie. He was born in the late 1800s, believed to be a direct descendant of the Queen of Sheba and King Solomon. He was known during his reign as the Lion of Judah, and Christian churches hail him throughout the country. He was the last emperor of Ethiopia, overthrown by a coup from his military in the early 1970s, and later executed by the leader of the coup, Mengistu. Mengistu went on to establish the Derg government, and here is a picture of him with a bottle of supposed blood in his hand. The Derg terrorized the country in a killing known as the Red Terror, where he murdered all involved in Haile Selassie's government, as well as over 500,000, that's half a million, civilians who were peacefully protesting for their freedom. There were walls full of faces of those killed in the National Museum, anyone who wore glasses, who had soft hands, who had an education, doctors and teachers, journalists and artists. Torture and executions would define the landscape in Ethiopia for the next 20 years and would spill over into Eritrea because the Derg decided that they needed the port of Massawa and attack their neighbor, occupying their land and terrorizing their people as well. In the early 90s, the Derg was overthrown, the people voted for leaders, and courts were set up to hold those responsible for the killings accountable, and 51 cabinet members of the Derg were executed. Numerous more were imprisoned. In 1991, just after world leaders helped to broker peace between Ethiopia and Eritrea, giving Eritrea its sovereignty back, Ethiopia went on a revenge bombing of the Eritrean capital city of Massawa. And this is what it still looks like today, nearly 30 years later. Nothing has been rebuilt. War with Ethiopia would continue until just this past year when peace treaties were signed and Eritrea opened its doors to the outside, which is how my sister and I were able to get visas and travel into the country. As I've been sitting with more and more details of this history, uncovering layers and contradictory stories, I've been overwhelmed by the violence in our world, violence in their world, violence in my lifetime. And I have come to feel almost guilty for my privilege of being able to stay outside of that violence, my physical body. We don't have that kind of war here. Many of you know that I had my own kind of violence in my personal life as a child with a violently abusive stepmother, but walking the streets of Addis Ababa, the capital of Ethiopia, and Asmara, the capital of Eritrea, I realized that systemic violence that rips away the human connections of families and communities is a violence I am not familiar with. I walked past people missing limbs and missing eyes, with scars on their faces and arms and hands whose origins I would never dare to ask. People whose only possessions are the clothes on their back and a metal lean-to under which they sleep at night. That kind of violence and that kind of poverty are things most Americans cannot understand. And I wonder, how do they dare to dream after all their loss and pain? I took the scripture readings for this sermon with me on the trip, reading them on a regular basis to allow the words of restoration and hope to intermingle with their history I was learning and the people that I was encountering and the stories that I was hearing. And the two verses that moved constantly in my mind were firstly the one I've shared a few times already, "We were like those who dream," and secondly the words of Jesus from the gospel, "The poor you will have with you always, but you will not always have me." And I've wondered what this means. Is Jesus saying to not be concerned with the poor? Certainly not, for everything his life exemplified for us is to side with the poor and the marginalized in all situations. But I wonder about these words. They seem paradoxical, right? Because don't we tell our children that God, or Jesus, if you will, is always with you? That you are created in God's image and Jesus is always right there when you need him. But in this story, Jesus is declaring that no, indeed, he tells those who have dedicated their lives to him that he will not always be with them. And this, for me, has become the point or the crux of the whole passage. Yes, we will always, on this earth, have the poor. We will always have wars and famines and natural disasters and greedy leaders who make decisions that benefit themselves more than the people they are supposed to be representing. Here in America, we can get so overwhelmed, and in this congregation, we can get so caught up in naming the evil that we see around us and being outraged, even justly, by that injustice. Corrupt politicians, poverty in our Lancaster City streets, immoral leaders who condone bigotry, religion that hates in the name of God, discrimination against people because of how they identify or who they choose to love or because of the color of their skin. Yes, indeed, these things you will have with you always, Jesus says. But you will not always have me in this time, in this space. When Jesus knew he was facing execution, he knew that Mary had chosen rightly. Not to be caught up in trying to change some unjust, nebulous problem out there in the world beyond her reach, but to open her eyes and see the need right in front of her. The need for Jesus to be prepared for his own death and burial. This troubled, hurting, dying human being whom she could bless. And I wonder if she even knew what she was doing. I'm not sure it matters because Jesus uses her compassion and love to remind all of us that it is not the problems out there in the world that we can really have an effect on through our actions, but it is the person or the need, the possibility to dream for a different future for what we see right in front of us, right here and right now. And sometimes I think that means what we see when we look in the mirror. In our Isaiah reading, we have this example of a true chiasmus, right? This poetic way of making a point of repeating certain concepts in reverse. So the author points out that Yahweh delivered Israel. The former things are past, and new things are to come. And Yahweh will deliver Israel again in the return. Scripture is full of such masteries of using words to make a point, to give hope to the hopeless. The people of God knew that in the past, as they were fleeing Egypt, God delivered them by turning the sea into dry land. But in the coming deliverance, God will do the exact opposite by turning the desert into rivers of running water. Now the people of God are wandering in the wilderness with 900 miles of dry and dangerous desert terrain between themselves and the promised land. And God, our author promises, will now turn that dry land into water and deliver Yahweh's people from their predicament. What a dream to hold on to for those wandering in the wilderness, to see rivers of running water, not somewhere else in the world, but right here and now, where there is no water and exactly where they need it. Our psalm today also is reminiscent to times past where God delivered and came through for God's people. We were like those who dream, the psalmist declares, like those who dream. What does a person look like who dreams? We have our population of dreamers, God protect them, in our country today, seeking a better future from war-torn countries of origin. We have daydreamers among us. You might be losing track of the sermon right now and looking out the window to the sunshine, seeing the singing bird and the blooming flowers, and I can't blame you for looking out there to a hopeful vision. I'm not a daydreamer myself. I tend to live in the stark reality of requiring myself to see all the ugliness in the world, so I know what I'm dealing with. But I'm challenged, and I'm challenging myself, and I'm challenging all of us to try to dream this week. Not pie in the sky or rational fluff, but to open our eyes to see what is right in front of us and to imagine what it could become with a different vision and with vigor and resolve to live into that vision. The Eritrean people in the streets today have a community that I have never seen anywhere else. There are people maimed and limping from war who walk down the streets and are called to the edge of a sidewalk cafe for a cup of chai or tea from total strangers. Men walk down the streets holding hands like couples in love. So great is the affection between them. And when they greet each other, they do this funny like handshake, shoulder bump thing where they shake and bump shoulders, sometimes three times if they really, really have an affection for one another. Sometimes they nuzzle their necks into one another. Men do this on the streets every time they greet one another. Women walk arm in arm. There is a love and pride of a people looking to rebuild their future and move forward. When you ask them of the war, they say they don't want to talk about it. There is peace now. They say, look around. What do you think of Asmara? And when you say, it's beautiful and it's peaceful, yes, they say, inshallah, it will last, inshallah. And it is beautiful. Everywhere you look, as you walk down the streets, there's a postcard-ready picture. Everywhere. The streets are clean. The Italians colonized this area. The architecture is beautiful. There's bougainvillea, and there are palm trees. And the people. I rode beside a woman named Afra on a tiny bus for 4 hours around hairpin turns as we traveled from the port of Massawa on the Red Sea back up to Eritrea, or Asmara, to the capital city of Asmara. Her English was not good, but it was better than my Arabic or Tigrinya. She had obviously little money, but when we stopped for tea in a little town, she insisted on paying for my tea. I was the guest. And before we parted, she took the ring off of her finger and gave it to me as a gift so that I would remember her and wish her well, and that I would remember Eritrea and wish them well. It was Mary's gift of perfume. Touching the person in front of you with love and kindness, with true goodness. In all of my Western money and clothes and possessions and excesses, I was fully aware that she was the one who was rich, bestowing upon me the greatest gift of humanity, love. And to be a dreamer, to dream for a future worth living for, and as Jesus did, worth dying for, what we must dare to see is the beauty that could be, not only the painful reality that is. To see the beauty even in that which has been damaged. Because we have a vision of what could be done with that damaged building or that damaged street or shop or person. Dreamers. Daydreamers, night dreamers, gay dreamers, love dreamers, beauty dreamers, all dreamers. I ask, will you be like those who dream with me? Inshallah, so be it.